crush and burn the schools and tents. We're your whole extended family when scores more murder with each passing day, with so many more on the edge of being taken away. Surrounded by tanks that fire at will, and the rest of the world stands by still.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, the heinous destruction of life and limb in Gaza and now Lebanon by Israel could not be continued or even contemplated in the first instance without the material and diplomatic support of those nations meeting in Montreal soon, while all weaponry ceded to it is illicit. Given the state's lawless nature, some of the weapons being deployed against Palestinian and Lebanese populations are so morally vile and the effects so nefarious, their use exceeds violation of mere humanitarian law. They are in themselves crimes against nature, both human and animal, present and future. Igmar Lee is a longtime BC-based environment defender who describes himself as a rotten, belligerent, iconoclastic, ungrateful, unrepentant, and unpleasant tree hugger. He's been a friend of this show for more than 20 years, appearing more times than I can remember, speaking on vital, environmental, and humanist topics always. His articles have appeared as long online at Counterpunch, among other places, where I found his recent piece, Bludgeoning by Blockbusting Bunker Buster Bonds. Igmar, congratulations, firstly, on getting published again at Counterpunch. They've been at it for even longer than yours and mine association back in the old Peace, Earth, and Justice News days, if you can remember that, in the early aughts. Igmar, first of all, can you tell me about your relationship with Counterpunch and Jeffrey St. Clair? Because I only mention it now because they publish you so frequently for their benefit as well as your own, but they're also running a donation double, I see, at their website. They're, you know, scrambling for money like all the small independents are.
Yeah, well, I've been submitting to Counterpunch for, you know, more than 20 years, and they don't accept everything I submit. I must say I've been on a bit of a writer's block for a few years, and I'm just starting to exercise the writing inspiration because, you know, I feel so generally helpless to do anything else. But I do love Counterpunch, and I am going to be doing the double donation. In fact, I just got through Password Nightmare and Diva at Counterpunch straightened me out, and I'm ready to make a donation there. And, like, you know, you give them $100 and then somebody else doubles that. So that's pretty good. I've had issues with Counterpunch. It has become much more American-centric than it used to be. Counterpunch used to be much more of an international writership. And I appreciated that more. I find it very tediously over-American these days. But nevertheless, apparently their website gets 1 million hits a day. So to get a piece published on Counterpunch is quite a coup. And of course, you know, your own stable of writers that you have got there at Guerrilla Radio, Chris, probably incorporates most of Counterpunch's most progressive writers anyway. So,
years past, that's true. I used to get a lot of my interviews from Counterpunch, but I've got to admit, like yourself, I've been a little bit, you know, I've kind of strayed off of them in recent years, but it's still really important to get counter voices. A lot of my greatest, most favorite people interviewed came from the site, and I feel a sense of loyalty to Jeffrey St. Clair for that, even though
I loved Alexander Coburn. I mean, you know, he was one of my favorite political commentators, the late Alexander Coburn. The only Canadian equivalent of him was that Russ Francis guy that used to write for Monday magazine. I kind of miss Russ. I think he did a great job in Victoria. Yeah.
Whatever happened to Russ anyway?
I don't know. You never heard a thing from him since he got fired by David Black, but,
Oh, well, that's not bad to put on your resume anyway in itself. Is it fired by David Black?
No.
But the Well, okay, so you did get your latest up bludgeoning by blockbusting bunker buster bombs, and this is regarding the I'm not even sure what to call it. I don't even know that this has ever been done in the history of warfare. The assassination of Nasrallah, the former head of Hezbollah in Beirut, by carpet bombing, I guess, was the choice of weapons by Israel. And you've written an article, your article is about this. You cite, first of all, the website How Stuff Works. And it never even occurred to me to do something like that, but just to look at the technology being used. What did you find there?
Well, I realized that, you know, from the corporate media that they'd, in Beirut, to get Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, the Hezbollah chief, to kill him, somebody must have routed them out. And that's one thing the Israeli military, infested with cowards and reliant on rats. You know, that's how they have managed to assassinate all these people. They're just really good at dealing with rats. But anyway, somebody ratted out that Nasrallah was in some kind of underground compound underneath, you know, six apartment blocks in Beirut. And so they dropped the first bunker buster, which they've been using all to flatten Gaza, which destroyed six apartment blocks full of people. And then they continued, according to there's nobody contradicting this. They used 84 bunker busters successively. Now, these are the largest non-nuclear weapons in existence, as far as I know. And they can be anywhere from 2,000 pounds to one ton, like one ton to 5,000 pounds, 2.5 tons, just the dead weight of the bomb itself. And they're called penetrating weapons. So it took 83 of these gargantuan bombs to bomb their way down through the bedrock to the depths of wherever Sayed Nasrallah was having his meeting, apparently, with a bunch of Hezbollah officials. So when I looked at that, I thought, well, you know, these bunker busters and this to penetrate through rock, and it struck a bell with me that, you know, back in Iraq, you know, when I was going to UVic in 2003 and the George Bush's Iraq attack was in full swing, the Americans had been using, it had come to light, depleted uranium weaponry, which depleted uranium is a byproduct of actually building nuclear weapons. And it's still a radioactive, very, very heavy, dense material that is basically a lot harder than lead. And they use it on armor-piercing weapons for blasting through tanks and you know, even machine gun bullets, you know, incredible penetrating power to have this depleted uranium. So I put two and two together, and I thought, well, you know, I mean, the whole of the Gaza atrocity has been predicated on the idea that Hamas is moving back and forth underneath Gaza, deep in these tunnels underground. And so, you know, the flagship bomb being used to flatten Gaza has been these bunker busters. The Americans have just been sending thousands of them straight to Israel, and you know, they're dropping them as fast as they can, and then they're demanding replenishment. So these bunker busters must have, obviously, you know, they had a purpose to get down into, you know, and I don't think Gaza doesn't seem to be built on bedrock. It seems to be built on sand when you look at the giant craters these things are leaving behind. But it occurred to me that they must be using depleted uranium. And so, you know, I had, I'll just digress a bit, because back in 2003, I remember starting to learn about the effects of depleted uranium, not only the incredible concussive power of being able to blast through bunkers and tanks and stuff like that, various kinds of armor, but the byproduct was this radioactive miasma of the cloud that would blanket the area after the shot. And as it turned out, the hospital in Fallujah, which had been virtually entirely flattened by the U.S. military out of revenge for, you know, a bunch of guys that got, I forget what happened, but they were ambushed and strung up and dragged through the streets and strung up, you know. I mean, people are absolutely outraged, you know, as anybody would be if you wake up in the middle of the night splattered by the body parts of your children and family and stuff. You got one thing on your mind. So anyway, they got mad and they flattened the whole city. Well, subsequently, the hospital in Fallujah, the maternity wards, started reporting these just absolutely horrific birth defects that were soon linked to this miasma of depleted uranium dust that had blanketed the city after being leveled. And so I was a student at UVic and I got onto this. I think I was a member of Amnesty International, and we would set up tables in the student union building. And I had gathered a number of photographs of the actual birth defects that were being reported from the hospital in Fallujah, and blew them up. And I went and I talked to the student union president there. I forget who it was at the time, but I discussed it and I said, you know, I want to bring this to light. And I'm just wondering if I, you know, these are pretty horrific, appalling photographs. And I'm just wondering if there's going to be any kind of opposition there, because, you know, it'll make people vomit right there. And so we discussed how to do it. And so what I did was I got a really beautiful blanket and I put it up over a notice board, and I had about a dozen pictures there that were covered. And then I had a whole bunch of literature on the table, and I was standing there. And then as students would come by, I'd say, have you heard about depleted uranium? This is getting used in Iraq. It's causing these horrific birth defects. And if you want to get an idea of what we're talking about, you can have a look for yourself by lifting up this curtain that's over the pictures one by one. And so, you know, quite a few people did that. And I mean, it had a very, very powerful effect. So anyway, that's I know a little bit about depleted uranium. So it occurred to me that they must be, because even though that is a war crime, and use of depleted uranium, as far as I know, according to the Geneva Conventions, is a war crime. But I don't believe there's ever been any sanctioning of the U.S. military, or any military in the world for that matter, that requires them, or where they've acknowledged international law and ceased to use depleted uranium. I believe the American military, you know, they're producing so much nukes. There's so much byproduct of this stuff, and what a wonderful way to recycle it in their mind, just add it to their munitions. So I wrote that article with the assumption that it was pretty likely that, especially to take out Nasrallah, that those 83 bunker busters would have been fitted with depleted uranium tips. And by extension, most likely the flattening of Gaza would have included, you know, uranium, depleted uranium weaponry as well. Now, what comes after that is, okay, now, so you've got this depleted uranium miasma blanketing the Beirut, you know, 85 or 84 of these giant bunker busters smashing their way through to Nasrallah would have left a very significant cloud of depleted uranium dust blowing through the streets of Beirut. And, you know, even like the World Trade Center, when that got destroyed, most likely, in my opinion, by Mossad or something like that. You know, the dust cloud that went through New York City after 9/11 is still causing people to, you know, up and die from lung diseases and that sort of thing. I believe that Beirut has been poisoned by depleted uranium radiation. And I, you know, wrote that piece with that in mind. And it had astounded me that nobody seemed to be talking about that possibility. So I got the piece published. And since then, I've noticed there's a big uptick, or at least now there are all kinds of people are talking about depleted uranium, including like Scott Ritter. He basically, you know, sounded like he'd read my piece. You know?
The former UN weapons inspector who knows a thing or two about these things.
Yeah, I mean, and now it seems like it's become part of the conversation about bunker busters, which are, you know, emblematic of the genocide. They're like the figurehead, you know. So, I think that somebody, and in fact, I knew that our friend Dimitri Lascaris, a great Canadian activist who was kicked out of the Canadian Green Party leadership race basically because of his activism on Palestine. I don't know what happened to Elizabeth May, but apparently she's been bought by the Zionist lobby. And in the federal Green Party, thou shalt not say anything in support of Palestine. Although I don't know what happened to her. Maybe she came to her senses recently and did make a comment about the slaughter going on. But
maybe she's finally on her way out. She's been leaving. She's been walking out the door of the Green Party of Canada for years, but still exercising a lot of influence behind the scenes.
Yeah, I used to love Elizabeth May, and I was grateful to her, and I think she was an incredible constituency leader as well. I don't know how she found the time. She was indefatigable. But her stance on Palestine and, you know, kicking people out like Dimitri Lascaris, I could never forgive her for that. And, you know, it's just like David Eby. I mean, he's like unforgivable, not only for, you know, standing by and watching the RCM pigs beat the shit out of Ferry Creek activists and stuff, but most unforgivably for not bothering to say a bloody thing about the genocide. You know, he's in a position of power. It behooves people to use their great opportunity as people with some modicum of power to, you know, people of conscience, like to speak up and use that power to do something. And, you know, I don't know what happened.
And you and I talked about that with the Selena Robinson, the cabinet minister, and that whole thing. She was a proud Zionist and made those remarks that are part of the trope about an empty land for a people without a land or whatever, you know, the whole thing. But she never even acknowledged that this is actually part of a trope going on. Yeah. Let me step in for a second here, Igmar. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Igmar Lee, and he's a longtime BC-based environmental defender. We're talking today about his article up at counterpunch.org, Bludgeoning by Blockbusting Bunker Buster Bombs. And when we're talking about depleted uranium, the police, the RCMP police at Ferry Creek, by the way, that's the SERG, the special corporate unit of the RCMP that goes in. I can't remember what the acronym is. Do you remember what it's for? Is it Industry Relations Group? And Industry Relations Group Policing or something like that?
Yeah, then, some gruesome thing like that.
I think they're just making fun of us, you know, sometimes. But talking about depleted uranium, you know, of course, Afghanistan, Yugoslavia, Libya, Iraq, we've seen it being used by NATO in the past. But looking at the U.S., I was looking at the American military, what they say about it, but it wasn't very interesting. But what the United Nations Institute for Disarmament Research says of depleted uranium, quote, does not meet the legal definitions of nuclear, radiological, toxin, chemical, poison, or incendiary weapons. Because it is, quote, not designed nor intended to kill or wound by its chemical or radiological effects. Mm-hmm. So this weaponry has its own intentions by the sounds of it. And those intentions aren't to kill generations of people or alter the DNA of everything that comes within its purview. No, that's just incidental. So that's all right, I guess.
Yeah. To me, it's a nuclear weapon, you know, and that's what I was saying about Dmitry, because he had just gone to Beirut. I thought he was still there. And so I said, hey, Dmitry, like, you know, get a Geiger counter and go down there and take some measurements, because I bet there's like a Geiger gagging dust cloud there that's just radioactive. And people in Beirut need to know about this. And it needs to be front and center that not only are they bombing the shit out of their building, out of their city, but they're also poisoning, you know, generations. It's a generational radiological killer, you know.
Well, I remember it's vividly those pictures you mentioned of Iraq, of the birth defects and everything else. And way back when, this was one of the very first stories that I wanted to do on this show, Guerrilla Radio, back in the late 90s, because of what was going on in Yugoslavia. And then after, you know, it was repeated time and again, and the cradle .co, a Beirut based news site, their reporting, their headline is Israel drops depleted uranium bombs inside Beirut. Official radioactive dust emitted by depleted uranium munitions has been linked to rises in cancer and congenital defects in babies following the U.S. bombing of Iraq. Now they're saying that they are finding traces in Beirut. I'm just trying to find the actual quote here. These guided munitions, blah blah blah. Anyway, sorry to cut in, Egmar. It doesn't
look... No, that's great to know. I need, like, this is a very serious issue, and I'm sure they're used in Gaza too, you know, like I'm sure Gaza is just, you know, and it's probably wafting right over the border, and you know.
Oh yeah, this is it. This stuff isn't limited to where it's dropped. So I mean, people in Israel are going to be getting the effects of this, and what's that going to do to the value of their beachfront?
Yeah, and their children are going to be having like three eyeballs and stuff like that too. You know, like it's just absolute madness. You know. Yeah, they're clearing out northern Gaza for settlers now, it looks like, you know. So they'll be have to have like lead floored houses, I guess, or something to stop the depleted uranium poisoning. I don't know.
Well, we're fast running out of time, Igmar. But like I said, you and I have been talking for a long time about a number of different issues, and we've talked about Israel many times because there's been just, you know, serial massacres and atrocities committed. This time seems very different, of course. I mean, obviously, I suppose it's very different. And when you talk about clearing out northern Gaza, it seems like all of Gaza, and I think the West Bank too. There's pogroms going on throughout the West Bank, conducted by these horrendous settler populations that revel in assassinating babies and children and stuff. They go on TikTok and on social media and celebrate these war crimes. What's your parting message to Canadians, I suppose? Well, I mean, these guys are Canadian, some of them going over there and then coming back here too. But anyway, sorry, well, couple minutes.
The good news is, and it's very good news, and, you know, it's kind of morbid. I don't think it's morally correct for me to celebrate as a human rights activist. However, the Israeli cowardly occupation forces are getting shit kicked in southern Lebanon right now, and they're bringing home lots of people in body bags, and they're getting just hammered, and even hostages. The other day I heard there was 13 soldiers captured that have added to the hostage list. They'll be enjoying the next few years underground. And but there's they're under retreat now, and so that means the whole of northern Palestine, I refuse to call it Samaria and Judah or whatever, that's all been cleared. And you know, the last report I've heard is that more than 1 million Zionists have now left Israel already. Now, I think there's only 6 million of them there to begin with. So that's like a very substantial part of a group of people. I don't think they should get any special favors, like Canada's cutting back on immigration. As far as I heard, Trudeau's put the brakes on allowing immigrants into Canada. And I think all those Zionists should go to the back of the line. And
What about the Canadians that have gone over there that have been recruited? I've talked to Eve Engler about this many times, and committed who knows what
that
kind
should
of
be
atrocities.
Illegal. And you renounce your Canadian citizenship when you do that. That's a no-brainer. It's absolutely ridiculous. If they went and worked for Putin, they'd be banned from coming back to Canada. You know, if they went and joined the Russian military. You know, in fact, I think some people did go over and some Canadians went over and joined the Syrian resistance and, you know, lost their Canadian citizenship. So that should be nobody wants these baby killing, genocide loving people as neighbors in this country. I couldn't abide by that. And I just am very grateful for the most courageous Jewish people who are in many cases leading the pro-Palestinian fight. And there's a whole enormous raft of names one could list off of people like that, you know, that are doing the most courageous thing of all.
Indeed. Indeed, there is, but we don't have time for that. We don't have time for that this time,
right.
Igmar. But Igmar's article, Bludgeoning by Blockbusting Bunker Buster Bombs, is up at counterpunch.org. They're having their Double Your Money fundraising thing going on right now. Check out the site. They've got a provenance like 25 or 30 years long or something. One of the very first online internet alternative news sources. They deserve help. Thanks a lot, Igmar. I want you to remind you too, Ken Stone, thank you. And Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network organized the No to NATO, Yes to Peace Counter Summit against NATO's Parliamentary Assembly. That is the weekend of November 22nd, in Montreal, and you can live stream it and do all those things. But go to their site to find out more about all of that. The Canada Peace and Justice.ca. Thanks a lot, Igmar, for coming on again. Sorry to give you the right bumps on. Rush, but that's it. We're right out of time.
Okay, I'd say one more thing. If people are going to search Counterpunch writers, because it was a few weeks ago that my piece got up there. Counterpunch writers, Ingmar Lee. Thanks a lot, Chris.
All right. Well, thanks again to you. That's all I got for this week. Until the next time. Adios.
Bye.
Completely surrounded with no food getting in. Ghost-like faces, impossibly thin. Kids that look like babies born, thirsty starving and forlorn, and being taken to who knows where, the elderly, the children, the wounded in chairs, with donkey carts and wagons south on cue, as the drones above the rubble order them to do. They're carrying out the general's plan, which means kill all the kids that you possibly can. Anyone moving, soldiers take aim. Who they are doesn't matter, they're all the same. Make no distinctions, orders decree. Killing them all is just how it must be. And right now in New Jersey, you can buy shares in the resort Jared Kushner plans to build there.
I gotta think that we're not alone.
I'm sitting in my house watching all this happen, and I've arrived to a point where I just can't keep my mouth shut anymore.
Guerrilla Radio, you're not alone.